What is it that advisors need to know about what's on the playing field, what's coming, and what they need to look out for relative to all things legislative and regulatory? We'll find out on this episode of Shift Shapers.
Change either energizes or paralyzes. The choice is yours. This is the Shift Shapers podcast, bringing the employee benefits industry interviews with individuals and companies who are shaping the industry shifts. And now, here's your host, David Saltzman.
And we're welcoming back Dave Mordo, Senior Compliance Officer at MZQ Consulting, for part two of our discussion, because nobody knows this stuff better than my friend Professor Mordo. Welcome, Dave.
Well, thank you, David. Nice to be back, and glad to be talking about very, very interesting subject matter.
Well, you know, God bless. As long as Congress and the regulatory agencies are in business, we'll have stuff to explain to folks and, you know, lifetime security, I guess.
What's better than interpreting a regulation that's 1,000 pages? Nothing.
We need to make sure you get out more. Let's start on something that's not necessarily insurance related, but is certainly going to affect all the employers that advisors serve. And that's this new rule that came down on non-competes, what it is, what it means, and whether you think it'll stand up in the courts.
Yeah. So I'll tell you a story. Back in the mid to late 90s, 1990s, not the 1890s, I was terminated from a job. I was a broker, and they no longer needed my services. So I went ahead, and I immediately started doing broker of record letters to take the business that was mine, that was in that agency, over when I started my own agency. I very quickly got a cease and desist letter from a law firm in New Jersey, and they said, you are in violation of our non-compete clause. And I wrote back to them, and I said, I don't have a non-compete clause. I've never received a copy of the non-compete clause. Can you send me a copy of the non-compete clause? And I never heard from them again, because I didn't have one. However, back on April 23rd, the Federal Trade Commission, or the FTC as we know it, voted very closely along party lines, 3-2, to ban non-compete clauses going forward. There are a whole lot of reasons why. Most prominent is the fact that the adage is that it hurts employees that are looking to better themselves with other opportunities. It doesn't allow for them to increase their wages, to start their own business as an entrepreneurial endeavor. And it just sits there and holds this. It's almost like a hostage situation. How can you say to somebody who has left your employ, whether on their own or due to termination, you can't compete in our industry? It's unfair. The FTC has said that, you know, we will allow people to increase their wages by banning non-competes. People will be able to increase their wages by over $300 billion. Not individually, in total. Every year, just by banning them and allowing people to pursue things that they want to pursue to better themselves. So the ban would obliterate any idea of new non-compete agreements, okay? You have to advise the employees that currently have one that they will not be enforced. Employers are going nuts about this. They're unhappy. They think that the employee will take proprietary information. Well, they're not going to do that. There are protections against that. There are protections against that. This is allowing somebody to go and make a better life for themselves within the industry that they know. But employers are in an uproar. The United States Chamber of Commerce has threatened, and I think has already filed by the time this episode airs, will have already filed a lawsuit. This is heading to the courts. And it's not just the Chamber of Commerce. It is employer groups. They like non-competes. They think it's protection. But this is going to end up in the Supreme Court of the United States, in my opinion. And
isn't this just an extension of the fact that non-competes have become, in many states, virtually unenforceable anyway?
Yeah. It is. I mean, there are some that there I know of at least one or two employer groups that strictly enforce their non-compete and have gone to court and won. But they are largely unenforceable. You're saying to somebody, again, it's not a question of I'm taking information that is deemed to be proprietary and stealing it or absconding with it. I am just operating in the same industry as you, trying to build a business to compete with you. What is wrong with competition? So most of the courts in most of the states have, ruled that, there is no enforceability here, and that you must allow for an individual to make a life of their own when they leave your company. You can't harness them by saying you just can't operate in our industry for 2 years or a year or 3 years. I've seen them as high as 3 years non-compete. It's silly. It harms the whole point of entrepreneurship, which is how this country was built, by small mom and pop businesses just looking to make their way in the world.
Sometimes those small mom and pop businesses end up being gigundo corporations. So let's change the subject to one of those. There is pretty much widespread understanding now of a lawsuit that was filed against Johnson & Johnson back, I believe it was in February. Where's a synopsis of what that is, what it means for advisors, and where you think it's going?
So back in early February, I believe you and I were at a conference in Puerto Rico, I believe, and we got word of a complaint being filed against Johnson & Johnson for not exhibiting fiduciary duties that acted in the best interest of their employees. Oh my goodness. Not only that, the complaint was filed by one of their employees, not even a consumer, an employee. Well, what happened? What happened was Johnson & Johnson was charging or paying for prescription drugs at a retail, such a marked up price to their PBM, where certain drugs for certain chronic illnesses could be gotten at one of the chain stores for significantly less money. This employee was paying big money when she could have been paying a lesser amount. She contended Johnson & Johnson was not acting in the best interest by paying these exorbitant prices when they could have been paying less. And the floodgates opened. It opened to what you and I now know is the brand new buzzword for 2024, fiduciary duties. Our employers exhibiting fiduciary responsibility by acting in the best interest of their employees. If not, you had better start to do so, because more and more lawsuits are on the horizon. We already have at least two more that have been filed. I think one with the Mayo, one with Molina Healthcare, and a couple of others down the road. And there will be more. Look, David, we live in a litigious society, and especially when you're dealing with ERISA and fiduciary responsibilities, employers have to bone up on this, and they need to know what to do. And if you're not doing it, you got problems.
And now, a word from our sponsor. This episode is sponsored by MZQ Consulting, a concierge compliance firm that excels at making the complex simple. Have you seen the news lately? Johnson & Johnson is being sued because J&J's health plans failed to negotiate lower prices for prescription drugs. In the case of one drug, the plan paid $10,000 for a drug that regularly is available for under 80 bucks. Not only were the members of the benefits committee named personally, but their benefits advisor was also named in the suit. And that, dear listeners, is why you need a top-flight compliance firm. Yes, MZQ handles all the usual compliance stuff from ACA reporting and tracking to RAP documents, 5500s, mental health, NQTL and QTL analysis, and a whole lot more. But the heat is being turned up on fiduciaries who don't act like it. In this environment, using an ERISA attorney-led compliance consulting firm is your best strategy, your clients too. And MZQ Consulting is where you should go. For more information, go to www.mzqconsulting.com or email them today at engage@mzqconsulting.com. Now, back to our conversation.
One of the things that I think advisors need to understand, that I'm not sure everyone does just yet, is that the fiduciary responsibility cannot be transferred to a PBM or a TPA or to an advisor. It's the plan's responsibility. How do you tell advisors that they should deliver that message? What's the best way for them to do that to their employer clients?
Swiftly, directly, and firmly. It is our responsibility to our clients as employers. I mean, that's a little bit of a fiduciary responsibility that we have as industry professionals, to sit down and explain to your employer client, whether that employer has three employees or 30,000 employees, you have to always act in the best interest of your client. You may think you're doing so, and many are. Look, many are doing the right thing. They have been advised properly. They know that they want to act, that they are caring employers. But there are others who just think of it as something way out there that is not to be concerned with. They're making assumptions that they're doing the right thing, and it is up to the broker to constantly remind their client, here is what your responsibilities are. And while I appreciate the fact that you think you're acting in the best interest by negotiating one price with a PBM take a look at it again, because we can get this drug for a whole lot less, or we can make sure that the network that you're dealing with has more providers. So I think we bear a big responsibility, because the employer's lawyer or the accountant or the financial advisor is unlikely to be the one to advise them. It's going to be us. It's going to be the broker, advisor, consultant that is in the know. And it has to be done in a very firm way to let them know that fiduciary duties under ERISA are not to be taken for granted.
And yet, if an advisor gets too far into the weeds, they risk liability. And I remember something that you said last week when we were talking about RxDC, which is that one of the things advisors might consider doing is finding a specialist firm that can help advise about what a committee should look like for a plan, what the charter should look like, how often meetings should occur, record keeping, all of those things that, as you rightly point out, a lot of businesses either don't know about or don't think about day to day. Would that be the same advice on this question?
In part, yeah. So, for instance, there's a whole new mini or subset industry of, for instance, pharmacy consultants who are there to look at, decipher, and make recommendations on your prescription portion of your contract. They look at it, they take it apart, they have an idea of the cost of the meds, they get all the data. So yes, that is a specific specialty that an employer can hire a pharmacy consultant. An employer can hire an employment law firm, if you will. Obviously, not everybody can do that, but there are plenty of consultants out there with a specialty in various aspects of the employer's health plan. Look, there are TPAs that are very talented. They have very talented people. They deal with employer groups all the time. They decipher the contracts. They're well-versed in ERISA. And they're there to help. But all of that, I think, is quarterbacked by the broker. Employer is not going to go searching and vetting a pharmacy consultant. The broker will. So we're the quarterbacks.
Well, and that leads us to the last question, I think, for today's interview, which is, let's pull back a little bit and talk about the broader canvas about compliance in the entire world of employee benefits. What does that look like from an advisor's perspective? What should it look like? What should they be doing? And maybe what shouldn't they be doing?
Yeah. So, as you well know, for 44 years, I've sort of been a compliance geek. It's an unusual passion that a few of us have in the industry. Believe it or not, there is only a handful of folks that absolutely spend 100% of their time in compliance. And it's a close-knit group around the country. And compliance is taking on so much more of a broader spectrum than ever before. As you alluded to earlier, our world these days is filled with legislation and regulation and rules and reading and bills that pass into law. And again, there's only one subset of people that actually read this stuff, digest it, and spit it out in layman's terms. And those are the band of compliance nerds around the country. Brokers have a full plate of things to do for their clients that don't necessarily entail compliance. The broker community is now relying on compliance folks to be a tool to help them guide their employer clients into what to do, what not to do, in all different aspects, from HR to regulation to reporting. All right, we report, as we said earlier, David, we report on everything these days, and you got to know how to do it. And the broker is so involved with other facets of taking care of their employer clients, they are now using compliance people to help with that. It is incumbent on a company's owner, CEO, CFO, HR person to know a little bit of every little detail in compliance. They don't have to be a maven about it. That's why they have the broker and the compliance person. But compliance is here to stay. A lot of it, as you know, and I know, is extremely enforceable. So don't try to get around it. Employer reporting, prescription drug pricing, hospital transparency, no surprises. There's an array of things. And fortunately, the broker, the consultant, the advisor is smart enough to realize that get a hold of a compliance vendor to help them, to walk them through, and more importantly, make sure the employer understands what their responsibility is. All of this leads to fiduciary care and responsibility. It's required under ERISA. We're going to give ERISA a beautiful birthday present as it turns 50 this year, and that is to make sure all employers are complying with the regulation.
And that is good advice on which to end our conversation today. Dave Mordo, Senior Compliance Officer at MZQ Consulting. Dave, again, thanks for sharing your geekiness with all of us.
It's a trait I rarely share, but I'm happy to share it with you, sir. So thank you for having me.
Shout out to the crew at Grand River Agency for their awesome post-production. This Shift Shapers podcast is copyrighted content and may not be reproduced in whole or in part without the express written permission of Shift Shapers Solutions, LLC. Copyright 2024.